him if Stephen Bannon or Fox News was sitting facing the charges that he is facing, that Julian Assange is facing now, facing the possibility of extradition, whether they were American or not? I would be defending them with the same words and the same vehemence as I do right now, Julian Assange,
Dan,
because our fresh freedom is at stake.
Jeremy, 30 seconds, and I also want to look at the content of what Julian Assange released.
Julian Assange released evidence, very clear evidence, of U.S. war crimes, including the murder of Reuters journalists and civilians, duplicity, dirty tricks around the world on the part of the U.S. government. I agree with Dan, and I just want to say it's actually irrelevant whether whether you think Julian Assange is a journalist. The First Amendment does not just cover freedom of the press. It's all of our rights. And this is not just about press freedom. This is about a democratic society and a major frontal assault on our basic liberties and free speech.
Jeremy Scahill of The Intercept and legendary Pentagon whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg will continue part two at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM. And to K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 5 o'clock. The KBOO Evening News is next.
Join us on Sunday, June 2nd from 2 to 4 p.m. for KBOO's 51st birthday party and birthday cake potluck. Bring a birthday cake if you can and celebrate the existence of 51 wonderful years of grassroots, volunteer-run, independent community radio serving Portland, Cascadia, and the world. KBOO is an independent, member-supported, non-commercial, volunteer-powered community radio station. KBOO embodies equitable social change, shared knowledge, and fosters creativity by delivering locally rooted and diverse music, culture, news, and opinions with a commitment to the voices of oppressed and underserved communities. Again, that's KBOO's 51st birthday party and birthday cake potluck on Sunday, June 2nd from 2 to 4 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/51birthday party.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meetings policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Finance Committee meets the fourth Monday of every month at 4:30 p.m.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, an Oregon man found guilty must learn about the Sikh religion as part of probation.
Alzheimer's Foundation Executive Director Charles Fascio talks to KBOO about the National Alzheimer's and Caregiver Educational Conference coming to Portland in June.
And in international news, Theresa May resigns as UK Prime Minister. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 24th, 2019. I'm Lisa Loving.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. The National Alzheimer's and Caregiver Educational Conference is heading to Portland in June. It's organized by the Alzheimer's Foundation of America, and the event is free of charge. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with the Alzheimer's Foundation Executive Director Charles Fascio about who should come to the event and why it matters.
June 11th, when you look at the statistics in your state, more than 65,000 people are living with Alzheimer's disease throughout this nation, more than 5.5 million people. So the Alzheimer's Foundation of America feels it's incumbent to bring our services to your state to educate people about the disease and let them know that they can seek help.
Right, and it's the Alzheimer's and Caregivers Conference. Talk about why this matters for caregivers. Why are you throwing that in there?
Well, our motto here is all about care, education, and research. We were founded by a caregiver who cared for his mom back in the 80s and 90s who had no place to turn to for guidance, counseling, and support. So we want to ensure on this tour that individuals are educated about the disease. They know what Alzheimer's is. They know the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia, but they know that there are services that the Alzheimer's Foundation of America provides, so they will not go on this journey alone.
Also, Charles, I think that over the past 5 years, it's been that our National Institutes of Health and our federal resources and corporate resources have really started looking at Alzheimer's, what causes it, what can help people with it. Can you just talk a little bit about the research, the history, and how it has played out over maybe the past generation? Because 20 years ago, we didn't really know what was going on at all. I'm not sure that we know that much about it now. Talk a little bit about what we know about Alzheimer's.
You know, you're right in one respect, that 20 years ago, nobody talked about this disease. There was a very large stigma attached to it, and nobody sought help. So we want to ensure at AFA that we do fund research all over the world, and our research is geared towards better treatment. This year, for the first time, the federal government appropriated $2 billion, more than $2 billion, for research. They finally broke that $2 billion mark. Now, I know it sounds like a lot of money, but a single trial can cost anywhere from $800 million and up. So it's critically important that the research funding is there. You know, we never lose hope that there will be a cure someday, but right now we're hopeful that there'll be better treatment to improve the quality of life of those living with the disease.
Okay, now, Charles, the National Alzheimer's and Caregivers Educational Conference, June 11th in Portland, what's going to be happening there?
So it's at the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry, the auditorium, from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. It's a free educational conference. It's open to everyone. It's designed to connect individuals with better information about Alzheimer's disease. The whole intent of this conference when we started this 2.5 years ago was for us to be in all 50 states. We've now reached over 40 states. It's information regarding Alzheimer's disease, brain health, and dementia caregiving. It gives participants the opportunity to interact with Alzheimer's experts, ask questions, network, and also we will be providing free memory screenings.
All right. Now, this is going to sound like a silly question, but who should come? Who in our communities is now or going to be impacted by this illness?
Not a silly question. Actually, very smart. It's open to the public. You know, you could be, if you're a caregiver, you could be there. If you're concerned about your memory, you could be involved in the medical field. We have professionals and non-professionals who have attend. We have caregivers who have attend, but we have the general public who attends who want to know more about Alzheimer's disease. When people leave these conference, they're empowered. They're educated. They're going to hear from experts. Dr. Michael Mega will provide an overview of Alzheimer's disease. He's the director of the Center for Cognitive Health in Portland. We're excited that he's going to be there. After that, we have a workshop on preparing and understanding for long-term care. During our lunch break, we will be providing free memory screenings, and we end the conference with innovative intergenerational programs and therapies. How important it is for people to experience different types of therapies.
Now, I was reading this excellent article about this event that appeared this week in the Scanner newspaper, and the writer talks a little bit about some of the research that shows that African American people are diagnosed at a much later stage, and people are impacted by it disproportionately. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
That's accurate, and it's unfortunate. You know, we do a research project, behavioral research project, with Emory University, and the specific purpose of that is to target the population in the Atlanta, Georgia, because the services to the minority communities are lacking. So we want to ensure that all communities, including the minority communities, are educated about Alzheimer's disease, but they have the services, they have the therapeutic services, they have the medical services that should be provided to everybody.
All right, Charles, is there anything about this event, this issue, or anything that you think is really important to get out that I've not asked you yet?
Well, if anybody wants to attend, they can call our office at 866-232-8484 or just go on our website to register. Go to the events calendar, and our website is alzfdn.org. If you don't have the time to register, just show up on June 11th between 9 and 1:30 p.m.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving. a noose spotted in the car of an employee of the Natural Grocer store on Martin Luther King Boulevard has prompted a public apology from the food company's parent office. Local African-American artist Cole Reed and her wife Dana are gallery owners in the store's complex. They were walking into the grocery this week with their four-year-old when they saw the noose hanging from the rearview mirror of a car in the parking lot. On entering the store, the couple asked around and found the employee who owned the car, who Reed says identified herself as a manager. After posting a photo of the noose on social media, the natural grocers chain responded with a social media statement that said it was, quote, as shocked and startled to learn of this as you are. Natural Grocers would not comment on any disciplinary action, but they did confirm the car was owned by an employee. The store is in a location developed by an African-American general contractor and features a Black History mural by celebrated local artist R.V. Smith. 5 years ago, the Portland African-American Leadership Forum protested the city's plans to build a Trader Joe's on the site and agitated for affordable housing instead. Housing was never built there, but the Leadership Forum's protest galvanized the city to promise $20 million to build more affordable housing in the neighborhood. An Oregon man found guilty of a misdemeanor hate crime must learn more about the Sikh religion as a condition of his probation. Andrew Ramsey physically assaulted a Salem business owner in January. He pled guilty to second-degree intimidation and assault in the fourth degree. On Monday, a judge in Marion County sentenced Ramsey to 180 days in jail and required that he attend the local Sikh temple's annual parade, then write a report about it. He will also serve 3 years probation. Ramsey was accused of punching Harwinder Singh Dodd in the face and kicking him to the ground. A witness said Dodd had refused to sell Ramsey rolling papers without identification. The Oregonian reports that Ramsey was given credit for the time he has already served in jail and will be released in time for the community parade in June. The family of a young man murdered by a white supremacist on a MAX train 2 years ago filed a lawsuit yesterday against TriMet and the Portland police. The suit alleges that Talishan Namkai Meche was murdered because the two agencies failed to arrest and ban the violent racist Jeremy Christian from TriMet after he physically assaulted an African-American woman the day before. The lawsuit filed yesterday asked for $10.1 million. It alleges that TriMet and police had two opportunities to intervene to prevent the fatal stabbing of Namkai Meche and Ricky Best the day before the attack. The suit says Portland police did not arrest Christian after they were responded to a call at a MAX station made by an African-American woman who said she was riding a train when Christian threatened her life and exclaimed he wanted to kill all, quote, Muslims, Blacks, Jews. The woman reported that Christian physically injured her. The lawsuit alleges Christian boarded another train the same night, made loud threats against people of other religions, and threatened to stab anyone who stopped him, an act videotaped by another passenger. Christian has pleaded not guilty to the aggravated murders of Namkai Meche and Best and the attempted aggravated murder of Micah Fletcher.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau exonerated a Native leader of treason after a conviction more than 130 years ago. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
The Cree chief Poundmaker was convicted after being found guilty of treason for his role in the 1885 rebellion in Western Canada. He was treated as a criminal and a traitor. A Canadian force had attacked Poundmaker's village in retaliation for what it claimed was looting. The troops were forced to retreat, and Poundmaker stopped his own fighters from pursuing them. At a ceremony on Cutknife Hill, the site of the battle, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau fully exonerated Poundmaker and said Canadians need to know the real story.
The government of Canada recognizes that Chief Poundmaker was not a criminal, but someone who worked tirelessly to ensure the survival of his people, well-deserved reputation as a diplomat and peacemaker. Here, that he stood up for his people and demonstrated compassion in the face of persecution.
Trudeau placed a pouch of tobacco at Poundmaker's grave as a sign of respect. Hundreds of people attended the ceremony, including Indigenous leaders, war veterans, elders, and Canadian politicians. The National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations also spoke about who Poundmaker really was and how that's reflected today.
He's a statesman, he's a diplomat, and he's a warrior, but he's a warrior for peace. And it's that truth that comes out today.
After his conviction, Poundmaker was sent to a Manitoba prison. He was released early because of poor health. He died 4 months later. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Montana Governor Steve Bullock and members of the American Indian Caucus held a ceremonial signing Thursday for a number of bills. Five bills focus on reporting and investigating missing and murdered Indigenous women in the state. Other bills seek to honor Montana's Native American history and heritage, which includes the permanent display of tribal flags at the Capitol and creating a memorial highway named after Native American veterans. 12 American Indians are serving in the Montana legislature, which is having an impact on Native issues. A nonprofit organization in South Dakota, which helps Native artists across the country, is expanding. China Lockett reports.
First Peoples Fund has been operating out of Rapid City for nearly 25 years. For the majority of time, the headquarters has been in a small shared office building. Now, the organization has purchased the whole space. Cecily Engelhart is the communications manager.
It's a good investment in the organization. It makes more sense financially, and it was just the perfect timing since we were growing so exponentially.
Engelhart says it's great to see the support.
Our goal is to be able to support Native artists in lots of different mediums, especially because there is a tendency to pigeonhole Native artists and like what constitutes Native art. And we know that that is much richer and deeper and more vibrant and diverse than people realize. So we really want to push that to the forefront and really make it known how, you know, expansive and expressive and rooted these different art forms are.
First Peoples Fund supports about 25 Native artists across the country each year through grants, fellowships, workshops, and classes.
It's just a really wide, wide range of people location-wise, but then also mediums, you know, lingerie to hip-hop to basket weaving to painting, all kinds of things.
She says First Peoples Fund has awarded 381 fellowships and funded hundreds of cultural bears. The nonprofit is currently aiding in opening a new art space on the Pine Ridge Reservation. The space is scheduled to open later this year. I'm China Lockett in Rapid City.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
When you hear the words water pollution, you probably think of chemicals, but soil and silt can harm rivers too. It's time for the Current Cast with Cheryl Nen.
The dirt on sediment pollution. On this Current Cast. When you think of pollution, soil may be the last thing on your mind. But soil runoff or sediment clouds water so fish can't see their prey, makes it harder to treat water for drinking, and can carry other pollutants into the watershed. Planting trees near a river can help prevent erosion, but Cheryl Nen of Milwaukee Riverkeeper says sediment also comes from urban areas.
You don't necessarily have to be right on the river to impact it. We tell people the river is as close as that storm drain in front of your building.
So sweep up instead of hosing off driveways and sidewalks, and notify officials if you see sand or silt running off a construction site. After all, we don't want to treat our rivers like dirt. Current Cast is produced in partnership with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future. Learn more online at currentcast.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Coming up at 5:30, it is Counterspin. At 6 o'clock, Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, The Struggle with Alyssa Pariah. Tonight's weather, overcast and much cooler than we'd like it to be for Memorial Weekend. Showers are possible and a low of 50. Tomorrow, we'll have rain showers in the morning, about 56 for the high. Clouds are expected to clear up overnight and we'll have a low of 48. Today in history, inspired by the ideas of the American and French revolutions, the United Irishmen Revolutionary Group began a five-month-long uprising against the British Crown in 1798. The quote of the day is from Patrick Henry. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
So cold, don't let me remind you.
and it takes two to carry home. Tell me what you want to say.
Tonight we're bringing you the Green News Report, 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, and analysis with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen of bradblog.com.
It's Thursday, May 23, 2019.
Missouri is under a state of emergency, hit by at least 13 tornadoes in just the last 24 hours.
Beleaguered Midwest, walloped by tornadoes and floods.
Sadly, carbon emissions have carried on increasing even after the Paris Agreement.
New worst-case study finds Miami and other coastal cities inundated by century's end. Louisiana unveils ambitious plan to retreat from rising seas. Plus, good news and bad as Trump's EPA changes how it measures air pollution deaths.
Well, let's just change how we measure good news and bad. All of that good news and bad straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
They want to knock down all buildings in Manhattan and rebuild them without windows. You know about that, right? No, it's crazy what they're saying. So many different things.
It's crazy what they're saying? This is your Green News Report.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, it seems like we have been covering disastrous weather for more than a month now. In the Midwest and central U.S.?
Unfortunately, yes. When the National Weather Service warned of extreme storms this week, they were right. As of airtime, at least 7 have been killed, more than 130 reported tornadoes in a 5-day period, including a violent night tornado that struck Jefferson City, Missouri. New flooding in Oklahoma and Missouri. And a heads up, the National Weather Service is now forecasting an early extreme heat wave for the southeast.
Well, pay attention. They were right about all of their warnings so far, and boy, I think we ain't seen nothing yet.
We now have the first named storm of the 2019 Atlantic hurricane season. Subtropical Storm Andrea started the party early, 2 weeks before the official start of the Atlantic hurricane season on June 1st. This marks the fifth year in a row that a named storm has formed in the preseason. Weather Underground reports that a second named storm is now spinning in the South Atlantic off the coast of Brazil. This is the first time on record that we've seen two named storms spinning simultaneously in both the North and the South Atlantic.
Yeah, but why worry?
Meanwhile, a new study projects that global sea levels could rise more than 2 meters, that's more than 6 feet, by the end of the century.
Oh, that's why worry.
That would have profound consequences for humanity, of course, but it's only if global governments do nothing to cut humanity's greenhouse gas emissions.
Oh, they will do nothing.
The new forecast is double the projections made by UN scientists just a few years ago. Now, 6 feet would inundate major coastal cities like New York, Miami, and Shanghai, and pretty much most of the nation of Bangladesh. And it could ultimately force the migration of nearly 200 million people. In an interview on Al Jazeera, lead study author Dr. Jonathan Bamber of the University of Bristol said he believes it to be a worst-case scenario, but he did warn that governments should begin planning now as a precaution.
They won't.
The 2-meter sea level rise that we project 2100 is not the most likely scenario, but it is a plausible scenario. So it is one that we should consider if we want to plan and adapt to future sea level rise. It was based on the assumption that we carry on increasing our emissions of greenhouse gases into the future. And, I mean, sadly, carbon emissions have carried on increasing even after the Paris Agreement in 2015.
Which, by the way, is something that Donald Trump is very proud about. He bragged about it at his rally on Monday in Pennsylvania.
Before this disturbing new study on sea level rise came out, the state of Louisiana unveiled a sweeping new plan, the very first of its kind in the United States, to manage the retreat of its population away from risky coastal areas. Mm. The strategy includes steps like voluntary buyouts to help people move away, and ways to prepare inland communities to accommodate the influx of new people. Louisiana is losing a football field of land every hour to rising oceans, while the land, scarred by decades of dredging by the oil industry, is sinking. Democratic Governor John Bel Edwards said in a statement, quote, "We have to be realistic about the current and future effects of coastal land loss and plan today to develop Louisiana's next generation of communities." Finally, some good news and some bad news. The good news is that the Trump Environmental Protection Agency this week backed off a far-reaching proposal that would have changed how it calculates future deaths from air pollution by assuming that there's no real benefit to reducing certain types of microscopic air pollution any further, so it's just not worth the cost to industry. After all, if you can show that there are fewer benefits to reducing pollution, it makes it much easier to justify weakening pollution standards. Scientists say that proposal is not based in science, but luckily, the EPA has now backed off the proposal. But the bad news is the agency says it will issue it later this year.
Of course they will. For much more on all of these reports and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. And please help continue the Green News Report far into the future by stopping by bradblog.com/donate. Thank you. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I need some good news, baby.
Yesterday, President Trump signed a memorandum to ensure income-based welfare programs are fully enforcing a 1996 Immigration Act signed into law by former President Bill Clinton. At first, the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act allowed the government to deport undocumented immigrants who commit a misdemeanor or a felony. Now, Trump officials are picking up a more obscure part of that act by elevating the requirement that sponsors of green card holders must reimburse the federal government for any welfare benefits they received. The original bill was designed to, quote, improve border control by imposing criminal penalties for racketeering, alien smuggling, and the use or creation of fraudulent immigration-related documents. But observers say the law is now being used to harass individuals who sponsor green card holders. Critics say the law is being used to unfairly attack low-income immigrants, as Trump has announced his goal to only allow, quote, quality people to remain in the country.
Facebook is refusing to remove a video of U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi that has been edited to give the false impression that she's drunk. The Guardian newspaper reports that the clip has been deliberately slowed to make her sound like she's slurring her words. Despite reports that the clip is fake news, the Facebook corporation says it will not remove the video, but rather will downgrade it in users' news feeds and provide a link to a third-party fact-checking website that has found the video to be false. The Washington Post first reported the story this week, and the Guardian reports that Facebook only responded to the incident after that report came out. Tweets promoting the faked video have been retweeted by President Donald Trump and by his attorney, Rudolph Giuliani. The Guardian reports that Giuliani later deleted his retweet and then sent a, quote, incoherent tweet in an attempted and apparent apology for the Facebook clip. The Facebook spokesperson said today, quote, "There's a tension here. We work hard to find the right balance between encouraging free expression and promoting a safe and authentic community, and we believe that reducing the distribution of inauthentic content strikes that balance."
After a fourth defeat in Parliament on Friday, Prime Minister of the United Kingdom Theresa May has announced her resignation. Critics say that May was slow to adjust to the political realities of Brexit and a bad exit strategy. In her resignation speech, May herself acknowledges that, quote, "It is in the best interest of the country for someone else to lead."
Back in 2016, we gave the British people a choice. Against all predictions, the British people voted to leave the European Union. I feel as certain today as I did 3 years ago that in a democracy, if you give people a choice, you have a duty to implement what they decide. I have done my best to do that. I negotiated the terms of our exit and a new relationship with our closest neighbours that protects jobs, our security, and our union. I have done everything I can to convince MPs to back that deal. Sadly, I have not been able to do so. I tried 3 times. I believe it was right to persevere, even when the odds against success seemed high. But it is now clear to me that it is in the best interests of the country for a new Prime Minister to lead that effort. So I am today announcing that I will resign as leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party on Friday the 7th of June, so that a successor can be chosen. I've agreed with the party chairman and with the chairman of the 1922 committee that the process for electing a new leader should begin in the following week. I have kept Her Majesty the Queen fully informed of my intentions, and I will continue to serve as her Prime Minister until the process has concluded.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 24th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. The producer for tonight's newscast is Tammy Habteas, and our engineer is Sam Bowman. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is myself, Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Lisa Loving.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. Have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, coverage of Donald Trump's trade war with China has led to some curious writing, as when the Washington Post reported, quote, dozens of U.S. companies have complained that Trump's earlier steel and aluminum tariffs drove up their costs and hurt more U.S. workers than they helped. But Trump does not see it that way, close quote.